that are able to listen to us live to check us out on iTunes. Either we are up there or we should be. And also people that want to, in the chat room, send us questions, we'll try to get those in there as well. But our guest today, Paul Nagy and Company. Paul, why don't you take a few minutes to tell us about yourself?
Yeah, well, okay. First thing I'll do is I'll tell you that I pronounce my last name in a contrarian manner, the way it's sort of pronounced in Hungary, which is as one syllable, Nagy.
Ah, totally apologize.
Nagy. Nagy. That's all right. Now, just, you know, most people use this terrible things. Instead of changing my name, I just changed how I pronounce my name to make it difficult for everybody. But let's see. Okay. Well, look, I'll just give a very brief background of how this thing got started. And then, that's right, Dale, you got it. And about how this thing started. A few years ago, mainly under the prompting of Cynthia Tedesco, and David Atwood, who... David, you're on the line now, aren't you?
I am on the line.
Good. We read a book for 2.5 years as a teleconference called, by Anonymous, called Meditations on the Tarot. And we enjoyed the process. It was a long reading the entire book. It's a very thick book, Meditations on the Tarot. We read it. We discussed the areas that were difficult and so forth like that. After we finished that, we decided to sort of go to something that was, I wouldn't say dumbed down, but was a little different. And we landed on a tremendously fascinating graphic novel that uses Tarot and the Kabbalah, particularly the Kabbalah as reimagined by Aleister Crowley, and the Golden Dawn, and uses the Toth Tarot as its basic inspiration. That is the Promethea books. They were written by probably one of the foremost writers of comic books in the world, named Alan Moore. And we've been reading them a chapter a week since last spring, and we're wrapping up. We're having our last meeting this coming Wednesday. And in the future, we plan to do a study of Hadarowski's book on the Way of the Tarot, and also we're going to be using Rachel Pollack's Tarot Wisdom. That'll be a free class, which will be happening on Tuesday evenings as a teleconference, either through Skype or through a free conference call. We'll see how the technology takes us. And that'll be coming up beginning in January sometime. And it's free. I believe in a view of what I call collegial learning. This is where each person who's part of the conversation brings their own life experience, and in this case also their experience as Tarot readers. And most of us are all Tarot readers. And we discuss it. And part of that discussion included every week, specifically with the Promethea comic book, we used a spread that Johanna created for her Tarot deck. And we've been using it successfully as a commentary on our own discussions and readings of the chapters. Johanna, you want to talk a little bit about your spread?
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you fine.
Okay, great. The spread was developed when I was writing my book, Guide to the Sacred Rose Tarot. Plug. I got to get the plug in. Okay, and what happens is that it was a spread I've been using for a while, and I decided to share it in my book with everyone because I felt, you know, it was a pretty powerful spread, and I enjoy its depth of information without that many cards. So that is the Elemental Power Spread. It takes in all of the four elements plus some hidden aspects such as motivation as well as an arc of influence for the outcome. Because many times, you know, you would get positive cards, and then all of a sudden you'll get a disastrous one, you know, that pops up and say, how come I've got the lightning tower here? Everything else looks so great. Well, the arc of influence sort of explains the outcome card, the sixth card. I don't know, has anyone been able to post the final spread? Because I'm here on your site, Paul. Should
yeah,
I
it's
do
there.
That?
It's there. It's actually, it's the second link down, and it'll be at the bottom of the page. I mean, and also you can click under the PDF. The problem with the PDF is you can't really read it. So it's Victoria's just put up the link. That's the PDF. I actually recommend not the PDF, but the other one that discusses this thing, because you can actually read what the cards are. You can't quite read the cards if you don't know them. Well, that's specifically what in terms of the outline of what we were doing. The whole point basically was to become much more used to using and reading with the Toth Tarot. You know, Aleister Crowley liked to be a controversial character during his days, and he was also not the sweetest person in the world, so he left a shadow beside him, and yeah, that's actually not it either, Victor. That gets you to the tarot spread, but it won't get you to the reading we're going to discuss today. I'm gonna have to stop. Hey, see who else is online now? Mary Beth, you're there. Why don't you tell us your experience of this reading, and I'm going to, I'll be quiet for a while.
Well, I will tell you, the biggest thing for me that came out of the Promethea group, other than just being able to share thoughts with all of the wonderful people who were in the group and knowledgeable people, was that the Toth Tarot came alive for me for the first time. I had a Toth deck for a long time and had attempted to use it for quite some time, off and on, and got very discouraged because it was almost mute to me. It would not speak to me. But suddenly, about, I don't know, maybe a month in, 4 weeks, 5 weeks into our reading of the Promethea novel, which I don't know if Paul said this already, but I will... We do a reading using Johanna's spread. Either we started out doing it before we actually read the chapter of the week together and discussed it. We ended up by doing the reading first to see how it was applying in the chapter reading. But as we began to use the Toth deck in Johanna's spread in conjunction with reading the chapter for the week, suddenly the Toth deck came very alive to me. And I did pull it out, and I used it myself for about 6 weeks' time. I used it exclusively, didn't use any other decks. And I was just astounded at how clearly it was speaking to me. One other real benefit that I derived from being in the group was a greater appreciation for the Kabbalah, particularly the Tree of Life. I'd always been intrigued by that, but... I'm even more intrigued now, and I feel just a little bit more knowledgeable about it, enough so that I know the avenues that I want to pursue to get more knowledge in that. That's about it.
Yeah, how about you, David? What was your take on things?
Well, you know, in reading the Promethea novel, it was a wonderful experience. There were five volumes of the novel, and they really took liberties with the Tree of Life, but you know, it took it in a different direction than I had gone with it before, and it increased my knowledge of the Tree of Life in a way that I hadn't expected it to do. And then when we did the spread that Johanna had developed before we did the readings, it really talked to me about divination and what the spread was really saying. before we even started the reading. And to me, that just blew me away, that after we did the spread and then we did the reading, the spread really did talk to what that reading was all about. And so I will be using that. Pardon me?
Yeah, well, that's part of the using the tarot to inquire into not just the tarot but anything you're inquiring in. So as
that's right. I'm going to be teaching on a class on Monday night on the High Priestess, and I'm going to use this spread as an entree to the discussion of the High Priestess, and we'll talk about the spread after the discussion class. So I'm looking forward to
it. Exactly. The conversation we're having now, we have a spread that we did for, which begins with, I put the URL on how to get this. It's Taro Hermeneutics, Taro Literature, Promethea Recon .html, but you should find it posted. It shows that what the first card that we got for this conversation we had was the universe. And one of the things, there's a cosmic dimension, not just to Tarot, but also to the story of Promethea. And thinking about that cosmic dimension, the world view, even though we recognize that it's a comic book and it's limited in what it can say, and it's an alternate reality that doesn't quite reflect the real world, at least not the one that we pretend that we think is real, together. What did you get out of sort of the vision of Promethea? What did you find inspiring about the comic book? Anyone?
Well, this is Mary Beth. I will say that it confirmed for me, even though I know it's fiction, it nevertheless confirmed for me something that I have believed at a very deep level for a long time, that the end of the world that supposedly is upon us very soon is not actually like a cataclysmic wiping away of everything on the face of the earth. It is the end of the way we view the world. I don't want to give too much away for anybody out there who may want to actually read Promethea after they've listened to this, but it confirmed for me things that I've suspected for a long time.
That's definitely the most recent thing that we're dealing with, specifically in Book 5. But there were four books before that. One of the things I did this afternoon was browse through them, looking at the pictures, looking at the story, glancing at remembering bits and pieces which I'd otherwise forgotten. And what's wonderful about an illustrated book is you don't have to reread it. All you have to do is look through the pictures and you start getting details of the story that you'd forgotten and see how it all fits together in a very cogent way. And the thing for me, and again, this is dealing primarily with the idea of the universe, was the incredible importance for esoteric study of the imagination. And of course the imagination is also primary to any tarot reader, whether they consider themselves a learned tarot reader and or a fly at the seat of your pants psychic tarot reader, you know. Johanna, you got anything you want to say about Promethea and its vision of the world?
Right. I think that in addition to the world, I just want to let everyone know that the cards, I did not read the chapters before setting the cards out. So what flabbergasted most of us, and we could take a vote on that one, is that...
It will be unanimous.
Yeah, that would be unanimous. Is how much they related, the cards related, to the chapter at hand that we were reading. I mean, an uncanny amount. And we will possibly have a final session, Paul, if I'm correct, with all of the readings that we've done, compiling everything in a PDF and be able to look and compare, a final comparison. of the novel, the graphic novel by Alan Moore. Great, and I love the phrase, the esoteric imagination. I love that one, Paul.
Are you on the line? Are you on the line?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear somebody. You, it sounds like you.
Yeah, it sounds like you. You want to talk? Want to say what your experience was with this group of chatty people?
Yeah, it's been great. I've learned a lot, especially with the cocktail, since I never used it, because I always had such a problem with Crowley being such basically a jerk in real life. I didn't want to have his death because it was like promoting a really bad person. But I've learned since then that it's really not a good mindset to have.
And what was your experience just of the story of Promethea?
I really liked it in that it's a young college girl being pretty much in charge of herself and then growing into a very powerful personality.
There are a number of one of the basic conceit is the Avatar conceit, and of course everybody mm-hmm. has a better idea of Avatar since that movie came out. But this is slightly different in the sense that the way this Avatar was created was Promethea is a person who died during the rise of Christianity in the 4th century from Alexandria. Her father was a major hermetic magician. She was taken alive into the Immateria, which most people would call heaven, and the Immateria is the realm of the imagination. Now she can come back to the world by incarnating through a living person, and so there are a number of incarnations of Promethea that arise. They all hang out together in a little sort of Promethea, a little semi-heaven. And together, all these different incarnations of Promethea at different points in history. And the way people get there is through basically invoking her through an act of the imagination, by writing poems, by painting pictures, and by otherwise invoking Promethea. This is an act that the imagination here, then, both in understanding and appreciating art, is also tandem to actually creating art. And art is this world of the imagination. And I guess another one, and this was Rachel Pollack, did join us for a while during our initial conversations of the Promethea. And one of the things that Rachel emphasized was that this is story. That was this incredible possibility of story. And this, of course, is usually what tarot readers do when they're reading for other people. They take the cards out and they see in them a story, a situation, and a possibility that the person who's being read for realizes is part of what their own life is. In other words, they reframe it. They can reframe their own story. Sometimes it'll also say specifically the tarot can not only give potential new ways of seeing an old habit, but they can also confirm that the way things are is not the way the person is seeing them. We know that tarot readings do many things. And so one of the points of things is that often I think tarot readers become too acclimatized to reading for other people or reading for themselves, specifically about their own personal story. And tarot is a much more powerful tool than that. This was recognized by the Golden Dawn, of course, when they saw it as an amulet, a basis of amulet, and also an initiatory path And the initiation is one of the great themes in Promethea. Initiation into not only, Sophie has to learn how to be Promethea. And Promethea represents someone who is going to bring about the end of the world, the apocalypse. And this is brought in very early on, and Promethea is under attack immediately in classic superhero comic book fashion. But there is this dire sort of apocalyptic warning that this is coming down and going to hit us. And what the meaning of the apocalypse is one of the great themes that comes out of, particularly in the what I call the end game of Promethea. But there is this middle part of the Promethea books, about almost half the chapters, not quite, deal specifically with Sophie going with her friend Barbara, both of whom are Prometheas, and looking for Barbara's lost love, her soulmate, who, and as she travels up the Tree of Life. And that is, you know, in some ways, that's the heart of the initiatory aspect of this graphic novel. And one of the things that I noticed when I first read it, and it was the reason why I wanted to do it in this context of a collegial study group, was that there are some things that Alan Moore presents, who himself, by the way, Alan Moore is a Telemite. He is a follower of Aleister Crowley. He is does practice magic to some degree. But it's kind of private about it. Of course, he's a pretty strong private guy in any way. But the one of the things that comes through is that there are dropped in various ways key understandings to the nature of what magic is. So anybody else got anything they want to address specifically about the initiatory path of Promethea and the Tarot?
It was perfectly illustrated in our what benefits have we obtained from studying Promethea. I'm here on the chat and I'm listing the cards as they are laid out, and of course the first card is the universe, which what better card for Promethea?
Yeah, well, also what better card to explain the importance of what we consider the study about that. But what about that second card, the Ten of Wands? That seems like somebody, it's sort of like you struck a fire, you struck a match, and then somebody dumped a bunch of water on it.
Yeah, right, exactly. Exactly, that possibly, and of course the Ten of Wands has the phrase oppression on it.
Yeah,
so maybe
right.
She's not oppressed anymore, emotionally. And
I think there's a good possibility with that. Of course, then we have the Ten of Wands, which is, you know, a surfeit of fire, you could say. You know, it's beyond.
Right.
And in the place of water, in the cosmic place of water, so you think things are really, really hot. And of course, what happens is that in the place of air, we have what, the Nine of Wands.
We have the Nine of Wands. Sorry, I placed that.
Yeah.
No, air is.
And
is sword.
Yeah, in the air place, right? And number three, people we read backwards, following the Hebrew letter of the Tetragrammaton. The Nine of Wands was the third card that was drawn, and. Yeah, the Nine of Wands, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I mean, I tried very hard. I couldn't read those cards.
It's Nine of Wands.
Right. Okay. And the air place. So we have a lot of this universe, and then we have a lot of fire moving us towards. And of course, the fourth place, the Earth, is the Ace of Cups. You know, so we have all this fire bringing into this quintessence of emotion, of intuition. in the Earth spot.
I think it's very interesting that the fire card, being in the position of water and the position of air, indicate that there's passion going on both emotionally and intellectually, which is really what happened to Sophie in her time as Promethea. She learned to get better in touch with her own emotions. She also learned to see things and think of things differently than she had ever thought of them before. And this sort of, in turn, ignited her own passion for pursuing esoteric knowledge. I mean, she was, as Val said, she was a college kid. Who cared about this kind of stuff, you know, at one point in time? But she was drawn out of her complacency. And I think that these two cards in these positions kind of indicate that.
Yeah, anybody else want to say anything about this spread so far, at least with the first four positions, as it relates to the Prometheus story?
Well, we have to get to the Earth card. We have to get to the Ace of Cups.
The Ace of Cups, yeah. So what's your take on the Ace of Cups? I see it as embodying, in a way, the immateria.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're dealing with all these higher level of things. The wands, of course, representing the highest one of the worlds. So the cups, Ace of Cups, representing the second. So we're all dealing with high Tree of Life stuff, and we're talking about the most archetypal level of with the Ace of Cups. We're not just talking about emotions. We're talking about, you know, principial insight into the nature of one's own active being, you know, before you're born. This is sort of like, this is the face of your parents before they were born, you know, your face before your parents were born.
And Paul, what's so interesting is, in the layout, is that in the position of Earth, that is what grounds the three previous cards. The Ace of Cups is the grail, is the,
right,
the secret question we all have to confront. And whatever it is, whoever, you know, maybe to change our world, to actually make our lives their true potential. And she got the Holy Grail, Promethea, over here. Or
yeah,
we did, believe it or not, because we asked,
yeah,
what benefits have we obtained from studying Promethea? How about some of the stories? I actually had a dream, remember? Very early on, within like the first week, in which I was Promethea, and I had a golden body, and I was floating through windows of friends, saying hello to them.
Yeah.
I won't mention which friends in the tarot community, but I did.
Just in case she left a few pellets behind, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, now we do have an interesting, almost disturbing card here in the number five position as the hidden motivation, which is the Seven of Cups. Seven of Cups usually means that you're wishing for something. You don't quite have a realistic view about what's going on. That's one way to interpret. We have other interpretations to the Seven of Cups. Anybody want to offer specifically this reading?
Yeah, remember, the hidden motivation is not the foundation. Like most people would think of the bottom card.
Right.
The hidden motivation is what drives you to, but you're not totally aware of.
So my stupidity drives me towards knowledge, huh?
You know, it's funny though, because this card isn't the keyword. I can't see it very well. The keyword is the boss, isn't it?
Yes,
it's kind of funny because the benefit to me of this is that it has, I don't know if it's a benefit or a detriment really, but I mean, I have always been so interested in such a myriad of esoteric studies. It's almost like, you know, it is like having all seven of cups up ahead of me, okay, up in front of me. What do I want? What do I want to focus on? What do I want to look at? There's too many to choose from. And this has kind of brought so many of them together. So, I don't know, maybe that was my hidden motivation. And
well, it's maybe not there's nothing wrong with that. A bad card. I mean, yeah. It's a horrible card in Crowley's interpretation, you know, debauch.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Of all people talk about debauch.
I was going to say, maybe it wasn't so horrible. He was kind of debauched. Maybe he considered it a badge of honor.
Yeah, actually, knowing Crowley, he probably thought debauch was a lot, was just fine. But the...
If you look at the whole sprawl, but if you look at the overall spread, and due to the stalk on the spread, I think it's very powerful. I mean, that talks about where the world is right now today.
Yes, yes. And that actually probably, though we could go back to 7 if we want, looking
absolutely.
At number 6, the Hanged Man.
Yeah.
Right. And things need to be changed. We need to see things differently. We're looking at it now.
And
so that there'll be a lot of very positive energy coming into the picture with the Ace of Pentacles and the Ace of Pentacles.
And to be honest with you, even though, I mean, you know, it's a big commitment to pretty much most of us were able to attend most of the times we met. So we were pretty much were able to have a continuity of, you know, from week to week. That's a big commitment of time for 2 hours a week to be talking to the same people, you know, reading this comic book together, trying to understand it, reading the spread together, discussing the meanings of it. It became kind of what this is talking about here and what the Hanged Man generally means. We were given an initiation into the deeper level of what tarot is, in a magical level. We're all slightly more self-conscious and better magicians.
I'd like to think so.
Oh, yeah.
You'd like to think so, yeah.
We've all faced
I think there's some truth to it, though. I mean, I'm asking, you know, it's not. I mean, I still think that face-to-face contact in the physical world is probably the best way to do magical work. But in lieu of that, this voice-to-voice communication that we did for over such a long period of time, in our own ways, gently prodded us into having a effective magical worldview that is grounded in our own true understanding, our own true being of who we are, not in abstract theories or you know, dogmatic assumptions.
It was very empowering. It just absolutely was. I have to say, this is true confessions time. There were a few times when, you know, the time for the call would roll around and I'd go, ugh, don't want to do this right now. I'm not up for this right now. But I would call in anyway, and invariably, I was glad I did. It was very empowering.
Now, so the future, we have one more meeting before we actually terminate. We've got one more chapter to read, which we'll be reading this Wednesday at a regular time, which has been 10 to 12 noon on Wednesday mornings. And our next initiative, which we're going to do, we're going to be offering it at Tuesday nights in the evening, either starting at 6 o'clock or starting at 7 o'clock. We're going to probably poll people to see which one's better.
And that's Eastern time, correct?
That's Eastern time, yeah. And that'll be, as I said, on Hodorowski's The Way of the Tarot, and we're also going to be reading Rachel Pollack's The Tarot Wisdom. They're very different types of tarot books, very different temperaments, though we are going to be sort of privileging Hodorowski's cantankerousness, and we're going to be using the Tarot Marseilles by Camoin. Philip Camoin and Alexander Jodorowsky redesigned a Marseille deck with very, very intentionally, specifically its color scheme and the way they redrew the cards are very well done. It's a nice esoteric Marseille deck. if you haven't
Paul, I noticed you mentioned earlier you weren't going to be able to see the chat room. Are you still having that issue or not?
No, I can see the chat room now.
Okay, because Victoria just asked, or somebody just asked, what is the link for people to join? And I'm assuming you mean to get more information for the new group.
Well,
is there anything yet?
Right.
Well, I don't have anything yet for that. That'll be posted, and I'll post it on Facebook, and I'll let the Victoria know so she can let people know through her show. But we'll have better information on that come the first of the year, come in January. And you'll be able to find out about it through the Tarot Hermeneutics site, which is where you should maybe now looking at this thing. So if you go to Tarot Hermeneutics, you're going to find out about it.
You know, one thing in which I would like to say about study of Promethea, it's a great way of learning and viewing the rite of initiation. I think it's an entertaining too. I mean, I wish there was a Promethea deck. I'll be honest with you. I would be one of the first people to buy one, but it would be.
Well, you could always create one.
I mean.
Maybe Paul should make one.
There would be so many problems with copyright.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are copyright issues with that, and there'd be so many problems with copyright with that it's just not worth dealing with.
From Alan Moore, it really does have to come.
Yeah,
from
it would have to. It would be
soul.
And the comic people are very jealously hang on to their very
their
jealously.
Artwork,
yes. Yeah, hang on to their artwork, right?
And you know, in a way, I don't know that Moore would really want that. I'm assuming a lot here, but I mean, he seems to be pretty enamored of the Toss deck anyway. He may not see the need for a Promethea deck, and therefore
mm-hmm.
wouldn't give his sanction, you know, to it. So,
right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's
yeah,
guessing,
I mean, and actually, in some ways, well, you don't need another deck. One of my cause celebres is that we don't properly appreciate the nature of what I call natural symbols. Enough in the tarot community, and part of the symptom of not appreciating that is getting into collecting various tarot decks, where you just collect tarot decks, because looking at each of these various artistic renditions of the cards, kind of spurs you to think about the cards in a new way. From my point of view, that's a symptom of not being attuned to the source of natural symbols, which, staying within the Promethea framework, is the immateria, is your own imagination, and is accessed through your own dream life. People who are alienated from their dream life to a degree are looking for symbols sort of like outside. I know that I don't expect anybody to necessarily buy what I'm saying, because I recognize that what I'm saying is somewhat controversial. But
especially
you know,
for those of us that have almost 200 decks, is that what you're saying? Oh, not.
Well, I mean, you know, it's not like I don't have. It's not like I couldn't drown or be buried alive in the decks I have. It's just it's just the It's just the problem.
I agree. But, you know, I will have to say, too, though, I believe one of the reasons I like looking at different decks is not so much because I am necessarily looking for something new. I consider them very much and Johanna, as a deck creator, you can speak to this, I consider them very much a form of communication. I think that the deck creators are actually communicating or attempting to communicate how the basic tarot symbology has affected them. And I don't necessarily think that's doing a disservice to that the groundwork of the symbology that's there. I think it's a conversation around it. At least that's how I would view it.
I don't know. Now I don't know what to talk about because we're in the middle of talking about how many decks people have.
But no, well, actually, 30, talk about your experience of reading the Promethea book, and also the experience of this kind of a remote teleconference study and sharing.
Well, in terms of the most general question of the remote teleconference, and specifically your hermeneutical process, I absolutely adore it, and I think it's really a profound way of gaining insight into, you know, the way you're approaching it, gaining insight into literature, which is just really, really fascinating and inspiring to me. In terms of Promethea in general, you know, I agreed with a lot of what other people were saying. I like what David was saying about how just uncanny the spreads were in terms of providing insight into the reading material, the chapter for the week, and with what Mary Beth was saying about it was just really interesting and fun and fascinating to listen to everybody's comments every week. I think in terms of my personal experience, it was just simply fun because I had read some of Promethea but not all of it, and I love the artwork, and of course I'm a huge fan of Kabbalah, and so it was just really interesting to experience it that way through the comic book. I do think what we were talking about most, I guess, Paul, you were talking about the idea of the initiation process. And I do think that that's important because in terms of thematically, the way that that's discussed in the graphic novel, kind of explaining what all the paths are in the Tree of Life, but then towards the end there's actually a literal initiation, a worldwide initiation of the path of Tav. That was really fascinating, and I just found it really interesting. So that's kind of my experience, I guess.
I like us to go back to the to our reading that we're doing for today. This is the 12 cards that we drew for this radio show, and we've discussed Through the Hanged Man, which is the bulk of the reading. And then Johanna, why don't you explain and also give maybe an initial interpretation of the what's called the Arc of Influence 7, 8, and 9 of the.
Okay, now if you look at the Hangman and you just in a way, just focus on the cards that we discussed. We discussed the four elemental powers, the hidden motivation, and the Hangman. So now, you go, well, what does that mean, the Hangman? That's the outcome, the future outcome. How can I clarify that more? What am
We're
I
all
going to
be
get?
Hung up, yeah.
Yeah, right, I'm all, you know, it's not going to
by our heels.
You know, by our heels and sacrifice. I mean, there's several ways of looking at the Hangman, but you're not really sure. You know, you want to get more, for a future outcome, you want always want to get some juice. You know, meat, more out of, juice out of the meat, because it's, instead of being left up in the air. So that's why the Arc of Influence is there. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now we see wealth. Nice. Okay. So the initiation and the sacrifice has brought us a new resource here. Wealth.
Right. Yeah.
Or tangible. Remember, it's a discard, so therefore it's tangible wealth. A, people, that is a pretty nice card.
Yeah.
Then
then we have here, and as we read, lust. Now, lust is Crowley's word for strength.
Strength, yes, yes.
Strength card. I don't know why he used lust, but it's the conquering of the animal spirit.
Or as he likes to call it, going with the animal spirit.
Or going
got,
with
he's,
the animal
he's got,
spirit.
He's got a riding the tiger, a riding the lion,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
As opposed to calming the lion.
Right. And then go with the flow that your animal spirit brings to you, that type of thing. And if you feel like being a cat in heat, be a cat in heat, that type.
Yeah.
And then the arc goes over to the Ace of Discs. And the Ace of Discs is a fantastic, it's another type of grail, because sometimes they said the grail was a disc or a platter.
And it's very, very, very real. I mean, you don't get a lot more real, and by real I mean tangible, than the Ace of Discs. It's
right.
I think I also want to briefly bring up that in our reading today, we have no swords.
Nope.
Yes.
Now
what are the odds with that, Paul?
I don't know. It's relatively, out of a 9-card reading, there's a possibility you might get one or two. You should maybe get one of each of the cards, one or two of each card.
Well, no swords, but no air cards at all, even among the majors that are here. There is no air here, so, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's no air there, but there is, that's right, there's no air. There's no, mm-hmm. there's no, but the reason I want to bring the issue of there's no swords in this particular reading is that the kind of knowledge or learning we're talking about is not intellectual knowledge. I mean,
the word is erudite.
Die in the word, a word, role, intellectual. But real magical knowledge, real mystical knowledge, real Gnostic knowledge, the true intuition that can come with the study of Tarot is not the opinion knowledge of swords or air. It rather is the great imaginative thing in the high spiritual sense, that the imagination is what creates and maintains the universe. And the thing that I think the future outcome is pointing us to is not only do we need to re-understand our own deep intentions and motivations, but in terms of the future outcomes, specifically, if we look at this, of the Ace, 10, and 11, right? If you look at the numbers there, you've got 10 of Discs, Ace of Discs, representing the full things. That the true magic is that the world, this world, Malkut, is the world of the imagination. From a magical point of view. And that's the kind of initiation that makes a person, that's when a tarot reading not only reads what's going on in the world, but remakes what the world is. And that's, at a certain level, a lot of tarot readers don't like to touch that, because that's when a reader is not only reading, but is also creating the world for the person they're reading for. Or they're also creating the world that they are in.
What you just said, Paul, is also very, very clearly expressed in the chapter that we just read this past Wednesday, a couple of days ago, when Promethea is explaining that.
Right.
She says, yes, I am an idea, but I am a real idea. And I think that just underscores what you just said very well.
Yeah.
Which was brilliant, by the way.
Yeah. I think this spread to me, this is David, I think this overall spread is saying, if we don't change the way we look at life, we don't change the way the world is going, we're going to end up in a debauched situation. The world is not going to go in the right direction. And the thing is that we have to find our lust, we have to find our dream, we have to find our inner strength, to bring up the Ten of Pentacles, which is the great work, the Ace of Pentacles, which is the form of the world we wanted to be in. And that comes through seeing things differently, and that's the Hangman.
Yeah, I also want to compliment you, David, that you often brought in the Tarot, the Spirit, as a commentary to our using the Toff deck. And the Tarot of the Spirit is a fascinating and profoundly interesting esoteric read, and I've always appreciated that. So we're actually coming to summaries. I guess we should probably allow our hosts, if they've got any questions
right.
of us, this would be the time to bring them in before we get cut off. We'll be cut off at the end of the hour.
Victoria, did you have anything that you want to throw out there?
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. I think it was a wonderful discussion, and I think it's great. And I just want to talk, now when you're going to have a reading in 2011, the people can just call in and participate, or they can only like listen in to your discussion. How does it work?
Well, what will happen is that we're either going to do it through Skype, where if Skype isn't reliable enough, we'll go back to free conference call, which we use the regular telephone. But it doesn't cost anything for people, at least in the United States, who have access to free long distance. But we're going to try Skype to see if we can see if that'll work, and we'll do a Skype conference call once a week, and anybody is welcome to join it. Who wants to? I mean, we may not all be able to speak at the same time, but we'll at least be able to listen and participate. We'll be reading and discussing. You know, I said Hadarovsky's The Way of the Tarot and Rachel Pollack's Tarot Wisdom. It's in some ways they're sort of both traditional how to read the tarot books, which is a little different than the way I go, but we're going to continue with the tarot hermeneutic technique, which is using the tarot spread as a dialogue partner, so that the spread actually offers us, that we'll do each week, offers us a commentary on our conversation and on the materials that we are discussing, the cards we are discussing. And this is, I think that, you know, a tarot is something that's alive. It's not a dead symbol system. And when you really understand how alive a tarot system is, that means that you don't see the Hanged Man as you won't see the tarot symbols as being limited to, you know, these very traditional symbols. So, gee whizzers, you know, there's no parrots in there, and there's no, you know, dogs chasing things. You know, there's just so many things that are not in the tarot that could be, you know, fascinating symbolic things. But once you open yourselves to the living reality of symbology, which is this dream world I'm talking about, which is this immaterial world, this world of the imagination, that limitation, the so-called limitation of the tarot, is not a limitation. It's only a limitation for people who think of symbols as things, rather than realizing that symbols are the way that we talk to ourselves. They are the mirrors of our own psyche. Symbols happen before we spoke. We thought in images as human beings long before we invented language, or language invented us, and we probably invented language in our dreams initially. Dreams probably became the seedbed of where language came from. So, you know, as I said, some of this stuff are my opinions. So is there anything else anyone else would like to say?
Well, could I just ask a practical question? So, like, I know that effectively, like, only one person can speak at a time to be understood. Do you guys in practice also have kind of like a chat room going, too, where you're able to type one another messages, or?
It's never been necessary.
Not presently.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Oh, okay,
yeah,
cool.
That's never been necessary.
We're
you know,
talk over each other, though,
exactly.
Oh.
Good demonstration, Johanna. We did that well, didn't we?
Yeah, right?
Yes. And when I hear people talking, I immediately try to shut up, even no matter where I am in my sentence. You know?
That's really hard.
But if we are go to yes, Skype or any yes. other of the web conferencing services, we'll be able to have chat. Right, Paul?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that at least someone,
that's true.
You know,
I mean, actually, with Skype, we'll be doing chat. If we if Skype works for us, we'll do that'll work for chat. I'll probably get a few of us together to see how the conference call works on Skype in a trial basis.
One thing I will say, you should use a headset with Skype, though. You should. If you're going to use anything, if you're going to want to speak on
Skype. Oh,
you should purchase a $15 headset, because otherwise it will not work.
And the good thing about Skype, essentially, is that it's free to belong to it. And if you belong to it and it's free, then you can tune in from anywhere in the world, theoretically, to this live discussion.
I think the chat is a nice feature. If we can do that on Skype, that would be a great thing, I think.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's been a good day.
And the other thing we might be able to do is we can also do what we did here today, which would be to have, if we needed any visual things, we would have an URL already set up with the necessary information that we could tune into.
Before we get off the air, I just want to say that Paul has been such a resource of knowledge.
Absolutely.
I mean, we all have something to bring to the table.
Yeah, I agree.
What we've done, but Paul, you are, with your social anthropology degree and your study of mysticism, your learnedness, you have been a great host.
I totally agree.
I do,
well,
too,
thanks
Paul.
A lot, but, you know, I couldn't do it without you guys. So, and so let's invite more people to the feast.
Absolutely, thank you, Paul. Thank you very much.
Reinventing the tarot for the 21st century.
Okay.
I think that's about done, aren't we?
Yeah, Paul, Joy, Cynthia, David, Valerie, Maribeth, Joanna, I want to thank you all very much for being on the show with us today. Victoria will do this again next week, and for anyone that's listening in an hour, Donna Lay on her Blog Talk Radio Beyond Worlds show is going to have a part two of her Dreams in Tarot with Paula, and I'll probably mispronounce the last name, I apologize, Chafee Scardamelia. And go ahead, Victoria.
Thank you, everybody, for coming to our show. And I
thank
just want
you
to say that next week we are going to have tarot readings all the way from sunny Ibiza. So do join us next Saturday. It's going to be fun. Paul, thank you so much for coming to the show. It was wonderful.
Thank you, Ed and Victoria.
Looking forward to your 2011 readings, and I'm going to be there definitely.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much for having us on the show. Thanks, everybody, for being able to show up today. And I'm going to go out and look at the snow.
Yeah.
Oh,
you have snow? Oh,
wow.
Yep. We do, and I'm going to do the same thing. Good night. Have a good evening, everyone.
Good night.
Looking forward to next Wednesday. Paul, bye.
Bye-bye.
Good night, everyone.
Okay. Yeah.
Good night.
So
good
people
night.
Should be able to...
Bye.
Yeah?
Yes?
So people should be able to podcast this show on iTunes either now or, well... Either that's a feature that we either have set up or will have set up. And so I'm going to take us out with the song by Ascension of the Watchers, their cover of Simon and Garfunkel's Sound of Silence.
Nice.